episode, almost 200 people. Oh, most episode 200. What does that mean? That means some people have listened to me blather or the group blather more than 200 times. And many of you, many more times than 200, because we've had so many mistakes in the past. But this is the Blathercast. We're going to talk about a ton of stuff. We're going to talk about 24 carats of pump up lovin', and that's me giving you guys some positive feedback for the day, as well as maybe a couple life lessons. That's what we'll call it. We'll have a little tagline, 24 carats of pump you up lovin'. Then we're going to discuss dealing with negative feedback a little bit, because I want to cover something that came up when it comes to reviews and when it comes to those kind of things. We're going to talk about the Avengers beta. We're going to talk about no price on the consoles. We're going to talk about the weird streaming service shit that's going on, where you've got movies that are basically DLC on streaming service because you're already paying for the damned streaming service and they're still charging for movies. We're going to talk about Bad Neighbors, healthcare, inventory, and Horizon Zero Dawn, and who knows, much, much more. However, before I get to that, I got to say two things. One, thank you to all the patrons. I love you. It's been an absolute blast. Two, go check out the Horizon Zero Dawn. And that brings me a review. And that brings me to three. And I said I was only going to two. That is just the beginning of the untold number of lies I'm going to tell you today. I forgot. Number three, I did more t-shirt designs. teespring.com/stores/ACG. Why am I bringing this up? Because Ghost of Tsushima came out. And I decided, you know what, ACG, it is about me at times. It's about the beard. It's about the one-liners, that kind of stuff. And I'll do shirts for that. But I was like, my love for gaming and the different parts of gaming actually speaks to me more than any kind of personalization when it comes to art. And I've never really felt that that's represented. So what I decided to do was I decided to basically create a new line of merchandise that's basically gamer-type merchandise. And what that means is I'm going to play games that I like. When I absolutely love a game, when a game inspires me, I'm going to identify the different ways in which I played it and make shirts that are sort of within that category, almost like classes in D&D or almost like classes in World of Warcraft. You play the Paladin, the Cleric, but I'm not going to name them boring shit like that. And I'm not going to use boring designs like that. So what I did first was Ghost of Tsushima. And I did stuff like the Shogun. How would a Shogun played? And I went and I studied. I already knew a lot about ancient Japanese and the ancient samurai and Bushido. But I took that. I had Warlord, Daimyo, and I took all of these different character types and I made shirts. I made designs for them that fit with ACG, have a little bit of ACG logo on them, but it's really more about gamers, how we play games, and your gamer type. What type of gamer are you in various different games? As a game comes up, if I absolutely love it, I'll be doing this as well. I'll probably do one or two for Horizon Zero Dawn. Actually, it just dawned on me. I've got two for Horizon Zero Dawn already on the channel. Charger is one of them based on the ram's head creature that's in Horizon Zero Dawn, and another one as well. So once again, teespring.com/stores/ACG. Check it out. If you get a chance, I would love for you to do so. What I was saying about thanks to the patrons, there's a reason why. I'm going to talk about that in a second, because something made me smile yesterday that was really cool that one of you guys did. And I want to discuss it because it's a sort of a cool feedback line that I get from Discord and from Patreon that I don't get from a lot of other places, which was very cool. But first, I want to talk about a little something funny that happened. So this morning, I go out. Now, I go outside. This is what I do every morning. Go outside, just breathe in the new air, right? The new dawn, and welcome in the day. I'm not a hippie, right? I just go out there, but I'm like, this is going to be a good day. We're going to do good things. And I love my backyard. It's a nice little place for me. So I go out there. Now, imagine, if you will, every animal within a solid mile coming to one particular location, shitting, and then dying. That's what it smelled like. So I go out there and I'm like, okay, most likely what happened is a bison escaped from a local zoo, smashed through my backyard fence, and basically took a giant dump and then died in its own shit. So I start looking for this bison. No bison. I'm like, maybe it was a buffalo. No buffalo. Maybe an elk. Nope. No elk. No elephant. Couldn't figure out what it was. But as I'm moving around my backyard, I realize it's not coming from my yard. It's coming from the neighbor's yard. The neighbors. Now, everybody who lives in a city knows about neighbors. You either have good ones, bad ones. You rarely have mediocre ones because you won't remember them, right? You'd be like, I think I had mediocre ones. Well, the reason why you think you had mediocre ones is because your memory didn't lock that shit down. They weren't really good, like that hot, amazing looking roommate that was a friend of yours that maybe lived next door and possibly, you know, ran around naked. which I may or may not have had, but it could also be somebody like mine. I realize that it smells like, imagine a bunch of people, just a bunch of hipsters, unwashed for about 6 to 7 months, rubbing their armpits together and living in a backyard for like a month. And I look over and I realize that my neighbor has planted enough stinky ass weed to put an entire cartel on notice. It is massive. It is a plantation of weed in the backyard. I am really surprised they didn't have like a rototiller and a bunch of people out there working it. It was crazy. Just a ton. Now, what's even more interesting, where I live, it's okay to grow, I think, two to three plants per person, right, for a home. This is like 80 plants. But not only that, it is quite literally next door, sharing a fence with a kindergarten / daycare, which is also, you're not supposed to be within 1,000 yards when you do that here. But additionally, it was within maybe 200 yards of the school nearby. It was just one of those things you got to deal with. You know, we have those issues. And, you know, this is Oregon. It doesn't really matter if you do anything illegal. If something has a small amount of legality to it, most of the time in Oregon, they'll do nothing. It's like, it's very rare that you will get them to even talk to somebody about cleaning something up. So for example, somebody may have a home, they may have 50 cars in their front yard, jacked up on jacks, oil spilling everywhere. And the only way the cops will probably ever show up is if somebody gets murdered and falls in a fucking pool of oil in this person's front yard. That's just the way it is, guys. We don't have a big police force and they're dealing with meth all the time. Meth is huge in my state. So it's unfortunate. And we weren't going to call on it anyway, but I mean, you get the drift. It's just one of those things. You have those neighbors that are just, you know, they just don't care. And like I said, you get those neighbors that when they don't care, they're usually the ones you remember forever. I always have the interesting neighbors. I had Crazy Cat Lady. She moved away, which was sort of in a weird way unfortunate because I could be guaranteed that every Friday, screaming Crazy Cat Lady, who reminded me out of like a character out of The Simpsons, would always show up and sort of scream me into the introduction of the international podcast, and she's gone now. But that's my weird neighbor story. If you get a chance, # weird neighbors, put it on Twitter. Tell me your weird neighbor story. I'd love to hear it. Moving on from there, let's talk a little bit about YouTube and Discord just for a second. So a couple days ago, I did a Blathercast and I was talking about Discord. I was talking about YouTube and I was talking about, I got a post one time where somebody was like, oh, you know, you pretend to care about the group, but you don't really track anything. You don't really care. And I was like, that's weird because, you know, I do care. I think especially when it comes to Discord and YouTube, that's really the only feedback I can tell when somebody likes the stuff. You know, somebody can love me and they can spread the word about me everywhere, but I'm not going to know unless I search my name, which, by the way, if you are anybody who has even a small following, never go to YouTube and search your name. It's a disaster. I can tell you it's a disaster, even if it's all positive, because a lot of times it's a little too positive, if you get my drift. So I don't do that. So Discord and YouTube have, and Discord, YouTube comments, and Patreon have always been that way. I know, you know, I can tell because somebody's put their foot down and said, hey, here's some cash, or somebody's jumped into the Discord, or somebody's, you know, take the time to comment. It doesn't mean we'll always agree, but they will state so. And so I do track things and I do care. And I mentioned this in the last podcast and somebody responded to me in Patreon. And I want to read this very shortly and then we'll move on to games. But I thought this was pertinent and it was really cool to get because when I talk about these things, a lot of times I just blather. That's why it's called the Blathercast. All I have is notes and I just go. This is pretty much the way I live my life, which describes to you why I suddenly described a bison breaking through my backyard. This kind of shit's just weird. It's the way I do things. So I don't really plan these things, but it was cool to get a response to it. Now, this person's initials are CS. I'm not going to say who they are. They can certainly say who they are wherever they want to, but I'm not going to say who they are. I'm just going to read this very quickly and their response to what I said. They said, hey, brother, long time no chat. This might be a lengthy message because I'm kind of just word vomiting all over the place. I don't think I've been active in the Discord chat for close to 14 months now, mostly as a consequence of changing life circumstances and not having the time to really commit to coming in, chatting, and joking around like I used to. I remember hearing in a recent episode of the Blathercast, your solo podcast, I think that's what it's called, and at some point you mentioned comments you received saying how you don't care about your community on the individual level and it's all just a facade. Something to that effect anyway. And it just really got me thinking about all of our interactions and how when I was only active in the Discord for a few short months, You noticed enough that when I did drop out for a good while, you directly messaged me to see if everything was okay and to check up on me. I don't know. I just thought that was crazy that you noticed one person's input missing in a group of hundreds of individuals. That kind of thing really stuck with me because it did make me feel like you legitimately do care and value the community you've cultivated. And I know I haven't been on the Discord in God knows how long, but I still consume all the content you put out. And without exaggerating, it is really often the highlight of my week to chuck a podcast on and just listen to you guys hang out and laugh. I just want to say I appreciate you and the positivity you bring to my life that extends far beyond just game chat and general life matters and a lot of other topics you've touched on. Really do wish you the best and want to extend my thanks for all you do. Thanks, man. So I got to say, that was awesome. And there's a couple reasons why, and it's not just because it toots my horn. It's because you don't always get to reach out to everybody, right? No one has that much time, but it is nice that occasionally when you do, somebody remembers it. And you will not be able to reach out to everybody. I try to reach out to people. Like if somebody says, hey, I got a drop because I don't have the money, usually I'll say, you know what, I'll sponsor you if you like being in the Discord, you know, whatever. We'll just figure it out. But you don't always get to. And it's a back and forth in there. It's a back and forth on Patreon. It's a back and forth on YouTube. But a lot of those places, you can't really track everything. And you don't always understand what somebody's saying because it's text and it doesn't have a lot of connotation. It doesn't have a lot of syntax to it. There's not a lot of context to what somebody says. And it can be misconstrued. And so sometimes you have arguments. Sometimes you'll completely agree. You'll be best friends. You won't necessarily want to talk to each other. That kind of stuff is normal. But I really do want to say, this is the kind of stuff I really do like. I've got it from comments on YouTube as well. And I like it because it's not only just me, but I know for a fact that other patrons have talked to each other on their own, like if somebody's having a bad time, and helped each other out. So to me, it doesn't even, I mean, this is great that I got it. You rock, thank you. But it's also cool because in a way, despite all of the world shit that's going on, there's this little community that's there that despite our odds, because it's not all sunshine and fucking rainbows, man. I mean, you know, there's times where people are like, dude, what the fuck are you even talking about? It happens, man. And you're trying your best to not be mad, but it happens when you're talking about stuff. And it's usually not about games, right? It's usually when something else gets involved. But it's cool because it feels like it has cultivated this little tiny community of people who were like, you know what, things matter a little bit more than games. And that's what we talked about on last week's podcast when Silver was talking, or the week before, where I think we celebrated, you know, 5 years of doing podcasts. 5 years, guys. 5 friggin' years. I have all my relationships, but 2 have lasted less than that. So somehow we all stuck together. Anyway, I just wanted to say thanks. That was absolutely awesome to read. I really do appreciate it. And, you know, I'll get angry ones as well, I'm sure, at some point. You know, that kind of stuff happens. But it was nice to read that and see that people are listening when we talk about these kind of things in the podcast. Moving on from there, let's get untouchy-feely, right? We don't need to get touchy-feely all the time, though that was cool. Let's move on to something that I want to talk about, which is no price on consoles. No price on consoles. Guys, we are up straight up August's rump, right? We moved up that rump. We worked it in there. And we are at August 2020. How in the hell is it possible that we are in August of 2020 and we don't know the console prices? And I'll tell you why. These are my hypotheses, my different ideas of why this may have happened. I really do think that both companies are slightly confused. Let me explain. Maybe all three companies, but the two that matter, Sony and Microsoft. Let me explain. Sony and Microsoft and most companies for years have been going tit for tat when it comes to consoles and when it comes to what they're offering. That is what has been going on. And for the most part, that is what had to go on. People do not realize that originally, static console devices without connection to the internet could not change. You had a specific amount of power, you had a specific amount of content, and you delivered it via some type of contained device. This was not a PC, remembering that other than Dreamcast, which did have a broadband adapter, and other than the Saturn, which had a modem adapter, neither really put more data on the system. They allowed you to maybe play online, something like that. But we are now, we've got hard drives and systems. We're changing the very content and how we deliver it. And what that's done is done a feature shift, and it's taken a while. And both companies have sort of meandered around trying to figure out exactly how they're going to do this feature shift. But I think we definitely started to see something happen when Nintendo who has rightfully so always sort of separated themselves from the power discussion once the GameCube came out. The N64 at the time was pretty powerful. It had some issues here and there. Prior to that, you guys, I don't know if you remember, but like the NES, the SNES, those had some crazy stuff like Mode 7. There was a lot of tech going into them. But over time, Nintendo started to adjust too. So they split off. They were the first to split off. They've not only split off, but they've shown that by delivering something that's pretty unique, as well as their own IPs, and as well as different systems at play, they can do something amazing, even with some weaknesses. Now, I bring this up for a reason, even with weaknesses. What do I mean? The Switch and online is a disaster. Why are they succeeding? Well, they have their own IPs, and they will mix it up. Rabbids versus Mario, that kind of stuff, they'll mix it up, and it is a mobile, powerful device that does Nintendo-specific stuff. It's not just a mobile device. It's also a mobile device with the Joy-Cons, right? They're always trying stuff. So it's different, right? It's different. But you still have Sony and Microsoft in lockstep. Boom, boom. Going at each other. You have the Xbox, which is fairly powerful. Then you go to the 360 and you go to the PS2/3. And you get this situation where they were trying to do stuff, but sort of with different tech, especially when you look at PowerPC components with the 360 and the way Microsoft tried to sort of do some stuff with the 360 and while the Cell processor and the PS3 tried to do. Then the PS4 comes out and the Xbox One comes out. Both of them chose mobile processors. And I believe neither would really tell you that that was the best bet. Both did very well. PS4, of course, doing much better, but both did well. And Xbox really hampered themselves right from the start. We don't know exactly how well they would have done had they not. But also, I want to point this out. We don't know if Game Pass would be a thing had they done well from day one, because most technologies and most companies are stagnant if they're not required to improve. That is the way they are. The requirement to improve is usually not the company, by the way. And I don't know if people know this, but it's easy to point out. Mark Cerny, who is the architect for the PS3 and the PS4, the reason why they go at a particular power rate, the reason why they try particular different things, is because he is not standing still. Sony as a company is standing still. And that's fine to admit. There's nothing wrong with that. That's the way the companies work. People within the company sort of plan these things, sort of build things out. That's the way they work. But especially when it comes to consoles, they're not accustomed to really moving forward in the same gen. Here, though, we get the Xbox S. We get the SAD. You can see Microsoft trying to figure out what they're going to do. We get the X. We get the Pro, right? They're already starting to figure out exactly what they need to do. And I think we can all agree that the X and the Pro were Band-Aids that were originally created due to the mobile processor that the PS4 and the Xbox use. Now we get the PS5 and the Xbox Series X. Why do I think they're confused? Because I feel that neither knows exactly where the other is coming from. Microsoft is doing something that no one has really ever thought to do in the console space before. And that's to say, you know what? Whatever you play on, including what you could almost term as not necessarily competitor products, but products that are normally unrelated, you can stream on. For example, Android. You have Game Pass, which to many people, including pundits within the actual industry, journalists, gamers, YouTubers, it was confusing. No one could figure out how they were making money. And additionally, whenever you heard a developer saying, "My God, we're doing better with Game Pass," most people wouldn't believe them because it didn't make any sense, right? It doesn't make sense instinctually. But the reason why it doesn't make sense is because there's a paradigm shift that's going on there. And that paradigm shift is happening at Microsoft. And Sony is trying to do somewhat of the same thing on their own, but they're also, I would say, handling it as more of a typical platform holder for their console, while Microsoft is going a little bit differently. And so what you have is two systems that I personally believe neither company knows exactly where they're going with. Now, the PS5, I'm not saying that they don't know. They've got their IPs locked down. They really know what they're doing when it comes to IPs. But their online strategy is at the strongest word I can use, not robust. their strategy is getting better, but you never know what they're doing with their online. They're a Japanese company, and it seems like when it comes to those companies, when it comes to the internet and the way things are handled, it never quite has that tact and speed that an American company or a UK company may have, or a lot of other companies just overall. This is just the way a Japanese-based platform seems to be when it comes to the internet. So now you're looking at these two companies where I truly feel they don't know exactly where they're coming from. Do we put a bunch of money in our IPs? Well, that's what Sony has done for years. And now Microsoft is doing it. But they know that they don't have a vested, let's say, heritage of strong IPs, except for your Forzas and your Halos, which, by the way, everybody says they want, and then at the same time will say that they don't want. This is another thing that companies have to deal with. They have to deal with somebody saying, where's Forza? Where's Halo? Those things are our nostalgia. We remember those. Oh, but also, I don't want another Forza. I don't want another Halo. This is something, by the way, Sony has to deal with as well. Sony, I think, has a track record of handling a little bit better, especially with, like, let's say, God of War, which handled you a God of War sequel that was in a way refreshingly different, like Fallout 2 to Fallout 3. Regardless of the negative hype that Fallout 2 to Fallout 3 had, I think most people would assume that that switch of viewpoint was better, and most people would probably assume the God of War viewpoint was better. But I do think they're confused. I think neither one knows exactly where the other's going. And this price point difference, I think Microsoft knows we can hinge everything on the subscription plan. Guys, come on. Where there's smoke, there's fire. Every day, there's a new thing being removed when it comes to paying for online, or when it comes for Game Pass, when it comes for Xbox Live, Games with Gold. They're adjusting their wording. There's some crazy stuff going on, and you can guarantee that that is all rolling up for some kind of big announcement when it comes to the end of this year and consoles. PS5 has been doing the same thing. They're now announcing different exclusives for Avengers. We know of one or two other big exclusives. We also know Microsoft has a couple, but Phil Spencer's been pretty open about actually not wanting those anymore. Remembering that people gave Microsoft a bunch of crap, even though they pretty much funded Lost in the Damned and Ballad of Gay Tony for Rockstar, and then Rockstar later put them on other stuff. But Sony has sort of done this for a long time, and even Ryan McCafferty from IGN a couple days ago was like, you know what, maybe Phil should do one or two of these. I don't know, but what Phil is doing is he went out, he purchased these companies that he felt had a creativity to them, and he said, you know what, you go make your thing, and we're not going to force you. We're going to sort of hinge on being the value add, and that's what you have. You have one that is offering value and a ton of titles, and the other that's offering really good exclusives, but over a long period of time. A lot of people like to get in this argument, but one big fact remains. The day a system goes live, even with backwards compatibility, most people want that to play new IP. And regardless of which system you're talking about, new IPs do not come out 2, 3, 6 every month, guys. Sorry. When you go and look, it's usually actually much more like 1 every 2 to 3 months. And a lot of people are playing their consoles between that time. And if one is more powerful, they might choose that. If one has a better deal or a value, they might choose that. We just don't know. We don't know, and I think they don't know. I think there's some hedging of bets going on both companies. And maybe there's even a little joke or two where they're like, hey, man, we're just going to wait. But I think we can all agree, August, we're right up in there, and still no announcement of prices. I think that's crazy, right? I think we can all agree that's crazy. What else is crazy? Let's talk about Horizon Zero Dawn for a second. I had a good time. Graphically, it's got a couple issues. It's not well optimized. But let's talk about inventory in games. Horizon Zero Dawn is crazy. Horizon Zero Dawn has a game that it feels very much like Monster Hunter Lite. It really does. It's got a Monster Hunter Lite feel to it. You go out, you can attack certain weak points on creatures, you can attack their strong points, and you can even do damage to those points on creatures and cause area of effect explosions or damage to other creatures, using them like little mobile weapon ostriches, if you will. That's all great, right? But their inventory system's a mess. It's really a mess. When you look at their inventory system, this is the only one I can ever see, which would basically say, if you buy a pair of Levi's and you want a bigger set of pockets, you have to basically upgrade every part of the Levi. You have to go in there and you have to upgrade every bit. You have to get bigger cuffs. You have to get longer legs. You have to get, you know, a bigger waistband. It's the weirdest thing I've seen. Every single selection and section of this is parsed out. And it's so confusing at times, especially when you look at the weapons. This is a game that has three different bows, by the way. It's got the war bow, the hunter bow, and the sniper bow. Three bows. Each bow can be augmented with up to, I think it's three. Yeah, up to three weapon augments as well, depending on the bow type. Additionally, each bow has a different tribe that it might come from with different, or not a different tribe, but a different area it might come from, where you can go from common style bows of a sniper type to the rare, super rare kind of bow that maybe is a special that you get from a particular creature. That's a lot of upgrading right there. But not only that, to carry those enchantments that you then enchantment onto a weapon, you have to actually upgrade a pocket on your quiver that allows for you to carry more enchantments. But guess what? There's also traps in the game. That's cool, right? You drop a flame trap, boom, blow up somebody. You drop an ice trap. Is that the sound for ice? You ice somebody. You drop an electricity trap. That's static, but you get my drift. Guess what, though? The game also has what's called a trip caster, which allows you to cast trip lines that, guess what, does those same kind of damages. So in a weird way, you've got two types of traps. You've got a trap that they will set off by going anywhere, let's say down a ravine, because it can be a pretty long trip line, or just towards you in a ravine. It's very odd. There's a lot of overlap. This is the overlap that Horizon Zero Dawn sees, right? Multiple overlap of weapon types, multiple bows, and multiple types of traps, all requiring different upgrades in your quiver or on your backpack to actually carry more and more of these. It is very odd. Add to that resources. These resources are crazy. By the way, guys, this is a game I like, but I'm talking about this. Resources. You go into this game, and this game's got resources for days. It's got resources for resources. No lie. One of the first things you get says, can be sold to merchants. Now, first of all, you're like, well, yeah, right? Like anything can be sold to merchants, which, by the way, is actually true. Anything can be sold. So first of all, why is that there? Then you get another one that says can be sold to merchants, or it says can be sold to merchants for metal pieces or the money. But then the other one says can be sold to merchants or traded to merchants. Now you're like, okay, well, selling is technically sort of trading, right? That is what it is, because sometimes you put an item down that gives you the money into your backpack, and then you get some items and that takes the money back out. You're balancing things. You're trading. No. Because what the game doesn't tell you right away is that there are merchants all over the game world that can take those items and give you specialer items. So what happens, and this is a weird thing that only Horizon and maybe two other games in my entire life have done, I just stopped selling shit. Because I didn't know, I was like, I don't know when I'll need this, man. So I just stopped selling shit, which then requires you to upgrade a boatload of crap so that you can actually carry this boatload of crap that you will not sell. Because if you have this boatload of crap and you sell it, you might meet a guy who says, hey, remember that boatload of crap? I wanted that. It's very odd. And we're talking, this is not an exaggeration. We're talking like 9, 12 sections, maybe more than that, sections of the backpack that you upgrade. It's a very weird system, all in all. Additionally, when it comes to the HUD, you know, you can craft in the HUD or you can craft in real time, which is a weird way to do things. I just feel it's one of those games where you have this inventory system that feels like they were going for they were going for Monster Hunter, and they went halfway there and then pulled back at some point. It's almost like they had another weapon type too. Because think about it. There's a sling. Well, there's multiple slings. Then there's a bow caster, which shoots off multiple arrows like a machine gun. And then there's your bows. And then there's your trip caster. And then there's a rope caster. By the way, the rope caster just ties down creatures. It's odd. Again, a great game. But I would say it is a title that I think, you know, when you look at the sequel, this is something that I'm hoping they fix. Because inventory in games is one of those things you don't want to manage, right? You don't want to manage it too much. You want some management of it, of course. But to me, you know, weight and how that's dealt should just sort of work on its own. And this is, interestingly enough, bad enough that the actual developers in one of their GDC talks, 2019, mentioned it as something that they wish they had fixed. So it's not like I'm just making this shit up. Speaking of making shit up, moving on from there. So let's talk a little bit about this streaming service thing. So I don't know about you guys, man. I have so many streaming services. I have Netflix, and I got Hulu, and I got Amazon, and I have Disney, and I have ESPN. Some of these are overlapping, by the way. I think those three are connected. I've got, you know, Spotify. I've got SoundCloud, right? Yeah, I've got all these services for TV shows, for movies, for music, all this stuff, right? HBO Max, HBO Plus, HBO Plus Max, HBO Maxipad, I fucking have no clue, man. So many services. And I've turned a lot of them off, right? I've been like, man, this doesn't make any fucking sense because a lot of these share movies or they trade the goddamn thing. So it really just depends on what month you get the damn thing because Friends will be on one and then it'll fucking move over to the other just after you get done paying. Now, though, we start to get announcements that a lot of these movies, these big movies that are coming out, are going to go to streaming services. Now, Mulan was one of the first, $29.99. I think this was talked about yesterday. $29.99 on a service you already pay for. So basically, it's DLC for a service where the DLC costs probably twice as much as a month, as 1 month. This is 2 months for one movie that you're paying. Now, a lot of people would be like, you know what? When I go to the theater and I get popcorn, this is what I brought up. Go to the theater, I get popcorn. If you get popcorn, whatever. You could, you know, take in your candy, what have you. But movies can be expensive. There's services and stuff, but we're just talking about the normal movie, that kind of thing. Because I for one, am a person that doesn't go to the movie very often. So when I went, it was sort of a big deal. You went, you sort of knew you were going to get grifted on that payment if you didn't go to matinee. I mean, we all try to get deals, but sometimes, you know, it's just the way it is. Some people work hours that they can't go to a matinee. But here we are, man. We're looking at, you would have paid $15 that month plus another $30 just to get a 2-hour movie. And I find that nuts. Not only that, if they're streaming that shit to your home, you can bet your ass Shadowplay from NVIDIA is going to get a whole lot of workouts because you cannot tell me that people will not be recording very. And by the way, everything from TV splitters to software, OBS can pipe into a browser screen. People are going to be recording that shit. Now, of course, they're thinking, well, we're going to make this money up front and it's better than not having it in the theater, which I would say I agree because I think we can all look at theaters right now. It's not a place you want to go, right? I mean, even if you're 3 seats away from somebody, I'm not necessarily sure that I would even want to do that. But just looking at these streaming services, and now we've got DLC for them. And this is just the starting, by the way, just the fucking starting, because we already have seen multiple streaming services have multiple levels too. Look at Amazon. When Amazon streaming first started, by the way, it was a fucking deal. You know why? Because if you got Amazon Prime, you already got the Amazon Prime streaming and not everything, but almost everything was free. So when you would go, you would look something up and it would be free. Now it is hard for me to find most things or most anything that is free after like the first episode. So sometimes they'll say, here's one episode for free. Everything else is like $2.99. If you figure out the price for that, I mean, stream it once, what have you, you know, as long as you keep that in your library and you continue to own it, it's about the cost of a DVD, $20. Well, actually, no, it's still more expensive. It's still more like 40 or 60 if you stream them all and buy each episode. It's just crazy, guys. It's absolutely insane, man. It's insane we're doing this. And we're at this position where, you know, people bitch about games. Man, I think streaming TVs, and in fact, I know this is going to be crazy to a lot of people, but I feel like, I don't feel like anybody wanted this to happen, but I feel like these companies are now starting to look at how they might be able to grift people and the bingeability of things and humankind's desire to click buy is fast, guys. It's fast. Man, it's fast. I've seen it late at night. I've been up too late. I've been on Amazon and then the next day I'm like, what the fuck? Why did I get like 17 extra small shirts? I can't even wear an extra small. My wife doesn't, my dog, my little tiny itsy bitsy, like 50 pound dog doesn't even wear an extra small. Why the fuck did I buy this? It's late at night, right? When your willpower is low, this is where one night stands and bad Amazon purchases happen. Both of them can end up giving you the gift that keeps on giving, bad credit or herpes. Here's the thing. I think that a lot of these companies are doing this and looking at it as such a boon to them because they are going to figure out ways and track you in ways that they could not track before because they know that Carrick is doing this at a particular time because I'm on the web. They're going to be able to track that shit where maybe they couldn't track me other than a movie ticket if I bought it and my name was attached, which most of the time it's not. Because of the way I buy tickets, it just, you know, my name wasn't attached to anything. Nobody could tell that I went to that particular theater or that particular movie. Now they're going to track that shit. They're going to mark it. They're going to Chinese propaganda that shit. And suddenly drones are going to be showing up at your house, dropping flyers for the new Mulan and be like, and it'll be just at the price that you have shown through consistent purchasing to be the price you will hit buy on. I guarantee it. You know what else I guarantee? I guarantee that anything you do, you're going to get negative feedback. I want to talk about this for a second. So negative feedback is something that you deal with whenever you're creating something, whenever you're creating, you know, YouTube videos, whenever you're doing anything, whenever you're doing work, you know, especially like in this day and age, I think reviews for job employment are probably nicer than they were when I was younger, where they'd be like, dude, you're sucking, you know, where now it's more like, well, let's try to figure out a way in which you can, you know, do better and suck a little less. Yeah, there's always something sort of skewed positive because nobody wants to make anybody feel bad. But negative feedback is a weird thing. And I was talking to somebody about doing reviews. They're thinking about getting back into reviews. And they were saying, has negative feedback impacted you? And I would be a liar to say it hasn't, but I don't think it has in the way that it sort of means when somebody asks that. So I already knew that negative feedback was going to come in because I got into reviewing because of negative feedback I felt towards current reviews. Hopefully that makes sense. I didn't like what I was currently seeing or didn't feel that whatever audience that I wanted to be represented wasn't being represented, so I started doing so. Sound, music, and voice, for instance, or more technical details on a game or more about development. And yet I'll see people say, I can't believe he covers sound, music, and voice. Now, to me, I'm just like, well, then that person is a person who was fine that somebody didn't cover it. So I don't take that as negative. I take it as, well, that's life. You are the future Carrick. Go out there and create a video. If you don't like me covering that, either find somebody else that is what you like, that you were accepting prior, or do it yourself and do something different, right? Because it is free, by the way. You know, people who do Patreon aren't forced to. People who do Discord, or sorry, Discord's connected, aren't forced to. People who share your video aren't forced to. They can do so, and you can always turn off the video. So if you're taking that time, sort of have to wonder why that's, you know, coming out in that particular way. But you look at this negative feedback and you get it. And one of the things I told this guy is I was like, listen, man, you know, the negative feedback you'll get, It depends on why you entered the arena. I entered because, not because I wanted to be popular, because that kind of thing I think is negligible. I think it's actually transitory and it's fairly transparent. I think that somebody who likes you today won't necessarily like you tomorrow. And that isn't even talking about online. That's talking about your own real friends. I've had it happen in real life with physical friends. So if that can happen with somebody that has to require you be around them, of course, somebody anonymous won't have any issues, right? It's that the negative feedback, I think, and what it did for me is it sort of solidified I'm in the place I want to be. And when people bitch in a weird way, it sort of makes me go, okay, good, because that person is noticing, even if they don't like it, that person is noticing what I'm doing, which is actually what I'm aiming to do. However, I did tell him one thing, and this isn't, you know, this isn't a way to really always deal with negative feedback, but I felt in this circumstance it worked. And I think in some circumstances it does, which is reminding them that, you know, it could be worse. And what I told them was, no matter how mad somebody is about a review where I say it's not worth getting or that it's worth getting, no matter how mad, I got somebody who was actually bitching about the title of my reviews and really mad about the title, like legitimately angry about how long the title was. And I was like, that's interesting. You know, that's like, what if that's cool that they're not worried about, I guess, life as much, or they're not worried about real stuff, that can bother them that much. But it's never going to be as much as the developer who made the game and the negativity that they'll get. That's just the way it is, guys. That's just the way it is. I mean, yeah, if I was, you know, multiple millions, then of followers, it may be true. But by then, I think you, if you're smart, you build in your own safety measures to take care of those things. But when I look at it, you know, if I like a game and I say it's great and somebody else dislikes it and a lot of people disagree with me, that means they're also probably disagreeing with the creator. And that is something that they take to heart, because I think that while I made a 20-minute review on a 40-hour game, that person made a 40-hour game on 4 years of life. And I just don't think people put that together. I do not think people understand what that's like. And I'm not saying that they have a plight and that anybody should be treated differently than everybody else. But when I was talking to the person, I was like, you know what, man? You're not going to be them, you know? I mean, that's just like, if you can handle that, if you can handle knowing that, you know, whatever you say about something, because they were like, man, I just don't want to feel bad about what I do, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? I mean, you have to be really shitty to not have somebody like your stuff. Okay. I should know. I started out shitty, and some people would say I've gotten worse. Some people would say I've gotten better, but that's just the way it is. But, you know, there's always going to be somebody that likes your stuff, or wants you to get better. And in fact, I like this person's stuff. I've seen their stuff before, and I think they do a very good job. So yeah, it was just an interesting discussion, because I was really sitting there thinking, if you look at the time span, the investment is crazy. I may feel like my investment is nuts, 40 hours, and they never pay off anymore, guys. Reviews do not pay. They do not pay. Reaction videos pay. Walking the walks, re-releasing them, by the way, has paid for them now. That's what's crazy. Re-releasing the Walking the Walks with the fun facts has actually ended up making two of them what I would term as profitable. What that means is, for example, the Egypt, I took the 40-hour class to bone up on, it was longer than that, to bone up on ancient Egypt before I did that one. And what was the other super? There was another super long one that I did a bunch of study for. And I looked at the time, and they didn't make any money, you know, day one. And that's fine, because I do them as a labor of love. And yet re-releasing them has. But when it comes to reviews, nah, man. They don't, not even close. I mean, it's been crazy. And so to me, you have to get into this for another reason, right? And I think that the negative feedback that you get, you have to figure out how to take it, and you have to figure out what it means to you. And to me, depending on what somebody bitches about, but if they bitch about the very reason I entered the sphere in the first place, that makes me happy. Not if they bitch because it's not covered well, but if they're mad, and I've had people mad, they're like, how dare you cover sound, music, and voice. And I've seen this. Like, I don't give a shit about sound, music, and voice. Now, realizing that it's not called ThemTube, right? It's not for them. You create it. It is technically YouTube, because they're getting stuff prepared for you, but it's prepared for you from somebody else. So to bitch about that is sort of creepy in the first place, but it's how you take it in. And, you know, I told him, I was like, I would love to see him come back. I would love to see people do this, but man, you have to be prepared. And I think that's anything in life, man. Negative feedback is a rough bitch. And you have to understand that, you know, especially when you look at jobs, when you look at life, a lot of times you won't get negative feedback at all if it's over, if somebody doesn't care. And they may care for a purely financial reason. Like, let's say a boss who wants you to, you know, pick yourself up so you do a better job so that they're not losing money. Or maybe they're just a dick, but we're not talking about those kind of people. We're talking about, you know, people who are truly trying to, you know, when it comes to jobs, trying to give you some feedback. Negative feedback can be rough, man. But it's so weird when you create like this, man. It's sort of in this vacuum, and you have to figure out how to steer yourself. You don't have yearly reviews. I have a review every single video. People don't realize that, man. You have a review every video. I get reviewed every video. I review a game, I am reviewed. Some game developer may release their game once every 4 years. Every single video, that's the trade-off. I don't have as much investment, but I do have a scrutiny every single week, or every single video I do. It's an odd world. And I would tell you, if you want to go in and you want to create stuff, make sure that what you create is something that you sort of want. You sort of want to, it's not that you want that negative feedback, but you want to do it to the point that people talk about it, even if some people don't like the extent at which you talk about it. I think that's the easiest way to, you know, to come out of it when it comes to being a content creator. Negative feedback's a bitch, but you have to figure out how to take it in if you're going to do something like this. Or you could be a rapper, and just any negative feedback you get, you just turn into some kind of beef video. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the Avengers beta. So I got the Avengers beta. I got to play it. We're able to talk about it. And I got to say, it's it's a weird title, guys. It's a weird title. I can't show any footage that isn't B footage here for the next, I think Friday. Yeah, Friday is when you can show full footage. Full frontal footage is what I was going to say. But the beta for the Avengers is an odd duck, people. It is an odd duck. Let me describe it this way. It is so interesting to play this game and the pomp and circumstance in which it opens, and to feel nothing. It could be that the camera angles are not very good because they're pretty rough. The camera angles, especially at the starting, is a lot of like, let's do some quick cuts and zoom in on characters and pound you with different characters. Just boom, 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 to where it's hard to really get a grasp of anybody before you jump onto the next character. But it's the mindlessness in which it's taken in. And I was thinking about Marvel Omega. If anybody's played that, that was the Diablo style game that was Marvel. And I played a lot of that. And that was also a free to play game with cosmetics. And I was like, why is it that that game wasn't so bothersome? Or it's not that it was bothersome, but wasn't so empty feeling to me. Now, I think it was because there was a lot to it. And this is a beta. I think that's fair. This is a beta, guys. I mean, we all need to remember that. But I think also when you put something in a third person viewpoint, it changes to become a bit more personable. It changes to make it feel a bit more close to your own heart. And that's what we are here. So you see things with a different scrutiny. In Omega, you couldn't zoom all the way in to see if Cyclops looked perfect, right? But here, you can see the Hulk exactly as he is. He's right there and he's huge. He fills up all the screen. And if it doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. If you see characters talking in cutscenes, and they're not the characters and the character actors that you're accustomed to, it can feel disjointed when you hear Troy Baker as, you know, Bruce Banner or something like that. And that's really what happens. It's a very odd title because it's brainless. And I think that helps it, right? But it also means that you're going to see that content from a close-up view over and over and over again. And I think we've seen this fail in games like Remnant, which tried to do the repetitive content, even though I think a lot of people like that more and more as the time goes on, it gets patched, but it still feels repetitive. And you're seeing it from a close, well, there you're seeing it from a first person view, I think. Was that third or first? No, that was first. You're seeing it from a close up view. And I think that repetitiveness is more easily noticed than, like, let's say a Diablo style game. And that's something that you get from this title, I think, right away. I also feel like one of the big issues with the game that I noticed is that cosmetics don't change the actual graphics on the character, which I found odd and I knew about prior, but I find to be one of the big mistakes that a game like this can make, because that's what I want. I want it to make a big change cosmetically. And it does seem to change the graphic of the attack. Gamma rays seem to do green gap. So if you get gamma ray attacks on an amulet, even if you're not the Hulk, you see that special effect, right? But I find it really odd that other than the skins that you get, the actual items didn't seem to really make any graphical change. So like bracelets didn't change the way the bracelets looked, which I think personally, when you look at most games, MMOs, even DC Universe Online, 13 years old, and they did that in that game. And that's it's basically a third person superhero game. And it's got a shit ton of content. And I can't believe I'm comparing these because graphically they're not alike, but I gotta say, strangely enough, gameplay wise, they're a lot alike. And not in a bad way, because I don't know if you guys know, but I'm a big fan of DC Universe Online as a brainless game. And I'm a big fan of Gauntlet-style games. And I think this could be great. But the repetitiveness of this mission format versus the open missions that are in DC Universe Online, and most MMOs are open, where this is not that kind of game. You're not just running around the world. That would be weird. You know, you're not just running around the world as the Hulk, just, you know, slowly cruising around town, just beating people up. That's not what it's about. It's about the helicarrier and doing missions from it. So my personal opinion so far has been mixed on that. It's been a unique process to play it and see what I thought has turned out to sort of be reality. And I'm going to sit back and I'm going to give it some more time. Obviously, I got the beta. I'll be playing tonight, tomorrow, and then probably on Friday, or maybe tomorrow night, I'll release a video. I sort of wanted to do a video with my own footage, but you can do B footage prior to that. And I may just do that and talk over the top of it. I don't know. It's a unique title. I think that, you know, as an early access, you can't ever judge these things too harshly. But you can see the overall way in which they're set up. And by looking at that, I do have some questions on longevity. And I have some questions on the difference of appearance in the way the cosmetics would work, even if skins dramatically change the character type, if skins aren't added to all these other things, that seems like that could end up causing some issues in the long run, especially with things like personalization, you know, feeling like you own that character. I will have to say, man, some of the attacks are fucking sweet. Some of the attacks were great. The combat itself, pretty much weak attack, strong attack. Each character had a weird kind of parry or dodge. Some characters had like a dodge that was far more active than others. And there was a unique element to some of the characters where you had to get up close and sort of hold a button to do a particular thing, which I felt like in the middle of battle, half of the time, personally, I would feel like that character would be destroyed by a co-player. That while I was trying to do that, most likely a co-player would hit that character and kill him before I could do whatever the special was. There were some delays and some stuff, or some weirdly timed combat. So it's gonna be a thing, and I can't wait to see it finally get released. You know, the Spider-Man DLC or the Spider-Man character is exclusive to PlayStation, and I think that could matter. But I will say, having played it, Not 100% sure it matters as much as a lot of people think. And that's actually having played it. I've listened up on some of the beta impressions from other people, and I would have to agree that, at least for right now, I'm not 100% sure, you know, how different everybody plays when it comes to 8, 10, 15, 20 hours in. Because even in the small amount of time I put into it, I've already had a lot of repeating bad guys as well. And this is just something that viewpoint makes you notice easier. You know, viewpoints, they do matter. They can make you feel closer. They can focus your attention visually, even audibly on things. And that definitely happens. You know what else fucking happens? I talk too much about one thing. Let's move on from there. Boom. That is my Avengers beta thoughts. Let's look at Twitter and see what Twitter has said about my question. I said, doing a Blathercast today. If you have anything you want me to talk about, let's discuss it. This is Draft Punk, Desert Punk. Desert Punk says, have you taken breaks when getting tired of playing video games? And what do you do to kill the time when taking a break from video games? Very good question. What I do abso-friggin-lutely is role play. Role playing has hugely jumped back up into the top 2-3 things I do. It's gone up and down at different times. Airsoft has replaced it. D&D's been up there all the time, though, you know, somewhere in the top 5. And of course, you got video games. Of course, you got reading, movies, TV shows, all that, right? Art. I love teaching myself stuff, and I love making music. However, role-playing has jumped just dramatically, and I could not tell you why. I absolutely could not tell you why. We're putting some stuff together for the Twitch channel, which should be really exciting. Just waiting on a couple things for that. But one of the things I've done, especially with this in particular for role-playing, is I haven't put it on the back burner even when I'm waiting for other people. I've been consistently, you know, coming up with ideas. And ideas that I think, I'm not going to sell it to you and be like, man, you've never seen something like this before. But I will say,
you've never seen something like...
No, I'm just joking. There's some stuff I think you guys will really enjoy. And some different systems we've got in place. And some different crowd and watcher interactions that I haven't really seen anywhere else. So that'll be very cool. Also ask, here's a topic, the change in gaming taste and behavior as you get older. Very good question. Has mine changed? Mine has really not changed. I will say I have drifted. I used to like sports games. The repetitiveness, you know, 2K, whatever that was during the Dreamcast and stuff. I had no issues with the yearly. I mean, I do, but I don't, as in it didn't burn me out. I would say over time, though, I have got out of experimenting with different sports. UFC, I've certainly enjoyed. I would say that's the biggest change, really. When it comes to gameplay or styles that I like, I'm not one of those type of people that will say, oh, man, I don't have 40 hours because obviously I'm a reviewer, so I do if I want to choose to cover it. And I can tell you guys right now, if I don't do a review for a video, but let's say did two videos on each game I just played and didn't do reviews, I would make more money and have more views and probably more subscribers than doing reviews. That's just looking at the past couple videos. Like, I'm going to get back into them. I missed this month, but doing the top, what was it? The top 10 games you may have missed and the top 10 games I'm looking forward to in the month. Guys, those, they did hotcake numbers when it comes to not necessarily views, but they were still good. They were definitely above a lot of reviews that I've got. And remember, a review is 40 hours plus, you know, the time to think about what you want to say and then have to deal with all of that. They, you know, you just sit back and talk about 10 games in a short list, and they do really well. So I would say my gaming taste hasn't really changed the way I cover games or the way I discuss games. I think they're pretty close to the same. Slight adjustment away from JRPGs, if I want to be honest. Lamont Cranston says, Cranston. I don't know if you're listening, but Lamont Cranston, that reminds me of Cranston Snord's Irregulars, which are a mercenary unit in Battletech. Is that where you got it? No, Lamont, that wasn't his main name. New consoles? I think you're just asking what my thoughts are on them. Right now, nothing until price is announced, just because it's difficult to talk about it. Pierogi Warrior says, it was mentioned somewhere you paint miniatures. What kind of minis you paint and how much you enjoy that hobby? Is there any place on the webs to see your work? No, not on the webs. I post a lot of stuff when it comes to Discord and stuff like that, you know, and you'll see me occasionally post stuff for sure on Instagram or here on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at Jeremy Penner, by the way. I never say that kind of stuff. I always should remember. But, you know, when it comes to miniatures, I do a lot of repainting because we do a lot of HeroClix. So what HeroClix is a, it's a miniatures game where you don't really need the rules because it's a dial for the miniature base, just like a normal circular miniature base on any other mini. But you twist it, and by twisting it, it has a window on it that shows different stats, strength, movement, attack, special attacks, as well as colors on those numbers. So you can basically play the entire game with nothing more than a tabletop, some cups if you want to have something for like verticality, and some of these characters. And they cover everything. Almost every DC character, almost every Marvel character. Hell, they had Halo. They had horror clicks, which was like Freddy and Jason and Aliens. They've had Battletech, by the way. They have a huge Battletech line. And they're super cheap now because they basically print one huge printing and then they never print them again. So a lot of people buy them in bins and then maybe they decide, oh, you know, I'm not into Halo HeroClix anymore. And you can go on eBay and you can get 100 HeroClix characters. Now they're random, but they'll be for like a particular world like Battletech or fantasy, right? Or superheroes. And you can get them for like, you know, $25 to $55, sometimes as high as $75, depending on the draw. That's insane. That's insane. Warhammer 40,000, which is something else I love, is super expensive, requires all of the rules and all this shit. So I usually can go there and get a bin and pick out, you know, I might get 50 characters, pick out 40 I like, 10 that maybe I'm not a fan of, but my friends will like. And suddenly you're got Batman going against fucking the X-Men teamed up with the Joker and the Master Chief. It's insane. It's insane. But they're pre-painted and they're not the best. The newer ones are pre-painted fairly well when it comes to basic level. And I mean basic level, like somebody who's learning how to paint, they're picking, you know, basic level. But you can dip them, which is a dipping method where you dip them in Minwax or other dip shades that you can buy from various companies, which adds depth in the creases. That works very well to add a lot of overall feeling and texture to the characters without doing any work. You dip it, you shake it off, let it dry, put on some matte finish so it kills that shine, and that is a huge step up because a lot of people don't realize when it comes to miniatures, your two really the most important bits are your dry brushing, which is your high points, and that shading, whether you know, whatever you're using, you know, you're using a dip or wash or something. So that has helped. And then sometimes I'll strip them of their paint and repaint those. It just depends. But I like to paint those. I like to paint, you know, I bought a couple. I've got Brimstone, which is a brand new board game, and I play the shit out of that game. But right now, without anybody physically here, it's been digital for playing that, but I still paint the minis. The problem with the minis, I will say this. So when I had cataract surgery, I was able to choose two types of vision to have good. They can basically have perfect vision up close or perfect vision far away. I had grown up and slowly over the years lost faraway vision. So, like a chode, like a dumbass, I said, I want to have perfect distance vision. I thought that would make the most sense, driving and so forth. And it does. However, up close, you have technically two vision centers, really, almost three. You've got your very close, your close, and your intermediate, like your computer distance from your face. And that's where I have issues. And so a lot of times I just don't want to mess with contacts or getting a pair of glasses out because I destroy glasses like nobody's business. And I don't even want to tell you guys how many glasses, pairs of glasses I've destroyed. It is no hyperbole. No one's destroyed this many glasses in their life, except for, like, you know, lens crafters when they end up printing a bad pair. It's pure insanity how many I've destroyed. So it's difficult for me to paint sometimes up close. I'll usually take the time about once a month. Favorite Zen. Oh, this is Nick Yenter. Favorite Zen games to play and just kick your feet up. I would say free to play MMOs are easily my favorite. Free to play MMOs are something I really do enjoy. And I enjoy them because they are a little brainless, right? And that's great. But also, with the free-to-play ones, they have a lot of content prior to needing to pay. I know a lot of people are like, what about endgame? Well, guess what? It's a free-to-play game. I'm actually okay with not a ton of endgame because I'm not jumping into those kind of things. So DC Universe Online, Star Trek Online, KOTOR, and Secret World, I play a ton of. Those are probably my, you know, sort of kick my feet up. And a lot of board games and stuff. In the Discord, Smugly says, do you think video game leaks are real? It seems like every day we're reading about new leaks and more than half turn out to be true. It makes me wonder if some developers are using leaks as a marketing strategy. Let me tell you what. Somebody in history has done that. So the real, I'm gonna frame this question a little bit differently. I think what he's asking more along the lines are most video game leaks real now, right? Are most video game leaks real now? No, still. Most were not real for sure in the past. And then, of course, as time goes up and maybe somebody says, you know what, let's time this leak because we want to see how people are going to, you know, what people are going to think about this idea we have, and we don't want to announce it, so let's leak it. That can definitely happen. But I will tell you, I've talked to PR companies, PR people, in fact, who don't even work in the industry anymore. So I want to make sure that's clear. They don't have any reason to lie. There's no NDA, right? They're not even involved anymore. And this is in the last year where they've not been involved. So this is not old data. It's just a person who won't lie. There's no reason. And they didn't lie prior either. But and they've told me that most of the time, in fact, it's a disaster. It is a unmitigated disaster because the company's going to pure lockdown. People are freaking out. A lot of times those leaks are completely, not completely wrong, but they paint the information incorrectly. So somebody may say, for example, somebody may say Spider-Man is exclusive to the PlayStation, you know, as well as other you know, characters or something. Well, then we find out Spider-Man's exclusive, but only for a year or only for this many months or something. While that's not a change, it's unfortunately not the best example, but you get my drift. There's a lot of different things that can change and can color it a slightly different way, even if it can color it better, in fact, but it can also cover it or color it worse, and it can give it a bad undertone. And I think most companies don't want to leak because you can't tell most people you're leaking that you would want to know that you were staging a leak. And that's your low-level people, your people that might be asked that on Twitter. That's what people don't get. A person who's low-level, when a leak happens, many times, you know, they won't know, right? They won't have any clue. And they get asked questions. And we've seen this before where you've got 10 guys answering the same question 10 different ways at a company. And then suddenly things, you can tell that they've got together and been like, dude, here's the line you need to use. Here's a line, because they've all said different data. And I can tell you most gamers don't think that. Every gamer wants to think that a conspiracy is the best bet. That can be true at times, but the adage that, you know, to do a conspiracy requires everybody to not say anything and not prove to everybody else they're special and in the know is quite difficult, because most people want the world to think they're special. Most people want the world to think that they're the number one leaker. Most people want the world to think that they're... That's why, by the way, if you do not believe me, go just wait till the next big leak about the industry comes out and go look on Twitter and see how many journalists, by the way, do this. Will they be like, yeah, I knew this, man, but I didn't want to say anything. Or they'll be like, yeah, this backs up blah, 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 or whatever. And not all of them are lying. Some of them that does happen. But if you track, you'll find a large number of people want to be known as a particular thing. And if you track them, you will find that they are most likely always the person doing that or people doing that. And that's because they want to be known. And that's the same way with companies. They want to be the ones to break the news, you know, a person at the company. And it just causes a disaster, man. People have lost their jobs over this. I'm not saying that they're all not real, because we know for a fact that some have been real, but many have not. And there's a reason why, by the way, we know this to be true, because a lot of people who've left the industry aren't magically popping back up and saying, oh, all leaks are fake. We would have had that by now. We would have had that from the doctors at BioWare, for instance, who have left the industry and can freely talk about things. Well, they don't want to, though, because they just don't care anymore. But you get my drift. Fratality8 says, what method do you record or recommend for recording audio? Do you write a script or just talk and edit? I talk and edit. That doesn't work for everybody. That's where the buffalo, you know, smashing through my backyard stories come from. I think that whatever suits you, man, whatever suits you. What I do is I usually go through some learning mechanisms when I'm thinking about what I want to explain with a game, the technical words I want to use, the way in which I want to paint a picture so that people understand what I experienced. And then I hit record and go. That is not for everybody. Some people write every single word out. That would not work for me. I don't even know how they do that. They have my respect because I respect people who, I mean, I don't think one is better than the other. In fact, I think in many ways that would be better. In some ways, what I do would be considered better. But I think it's just in some ways, right? That's all. It's just in some ways. Everybody's got their positives and negatives to how they do it. When it comes to recording audio, what I do and what I have found works for me is I go and I look at the files that I've created. I look at the gameplay in which I've thought about. I, you know, sort of think about the jokes I want to drop, the things I thought when I was playing. For example, I cut this out of my review for Horizon Zero Dawn, but there's a part where at the very starting during a cutscene, Aloy is a kid and she gets mad. And she squeezed and smashed these blueberries in her hand. And I was laughing so hard because it was so petulant. It was right at the starting of the game. She grabs these kids treat her like shit. This mother treats her like shit. And it flashes to her. And by the way, the model, character model is not very good for the kid in Horizon Zero Dawn. And it never was. I mentioned that this girl, Aloy, as a child, looks like the mad creature child that was in the original Road Warrior movie. I'm not lying. That's what this kid looks like. And she just squeezes these blueberries. And I had a joke about, you know, squeezing blueberries or I hate all the blueberries. And I don't remember. I don't even know how it happened. I just didn't put it in. I guess I didn't put it in, right? Yeah, I didn't put it in. But it popped up when I saw the video. Whoops, I knocked my microphone stand off. It popped up when I saw the video. That's what popped up into my head. And I'll just memorize those spots. I'll see that. I have the file, I'll maybe name the file Smashing Blueberries. And then I'll think in my head, what was I thinking? And those things are what I'm thinking. And some people aren't going to like my humor. You know, you hear that, by the way, no matter what feedback you get, you always hear that. But I was just like, yeah, who gives a fuck, right? I mean, what's the world going to remember? Is it going to remember me? Is it going to remember some joke about blueberries? No. So do what works for you. Record it in the way that works for you. Take some speech lessons, maybe online. Maybe listen to how people talk. Maybe identify with a comedian. I usually use comedians because people don't realize comedians are some of your best overall writers. Other than Chappelle, who I know a lot of people like, I actually find Chappelle very weird because the way in which he talks, which I think a lot of people are like, he's down, you know, he's down low. He's like hanging out with me. It creates a lot of gaps where my brain is like, dude, get on with it, right? Get to the next bit. So depending on the comedian, but I would say if you have particular comedians that track for you, listen to them and sort of identify that they are going through scripts. You know, that's how they do things. Well, they write them too, but I mean scripts as in, you know, recording it. Of course, they have years. Some comedians go for one full year doing the same stuff. We have to go week by week by week, but we also do, you know, 10, 15 minute reviews too. So just depends on what you're really trying to do. If you're trying to do a walking the walk type of video, that's going to be, I just freebase that shit. I take in as much research data as possible. I try to make sure it's correct. It's going to be wrong occasionally. And I just go. I just hit record and I go. And I feel that that works for those. It doesn't work for everything. Last thing I want to mention is talent, man. You know, talent is crazy. Most people have a talent of some kind, but I'm, and this is not me shining on or trying to get somebody's kudos. I go on to Twitter and I start talking to people and I mention questions like, hey man, what's, you know, a talent you may have? What's a thing you may have? And consistently one person comes up every goddamn time in my Twitter. And I got to mention this now, understanding his name is Andy Warren. He's at Silken Assassin on Twitter. Now, I want to warn you, his content is usually very sexualized, his art. So, but his art has color use that is fucking fantastic. It's insanity. It's like Ghost of Tsushima style, where my eyes do this thing when I see his stuff. And I'm like, what the fuck? The color work is just, it's like when I was a kid and I would see those black, you know, felt paintings or something. It's not that kind, by the way. It's just that where the color pops in that way. So I said, hey guys, you know, what do you do? And he just popped off a couple hours ago, it looks like, and he says, my art, the last non-sexual thing I drew was Slythe. I think that's how you pronounce it, because I can't remember how they pronounced his name, even though I love this, from the Thundercats. It took him 7 days from blank piece of paper to complete piece. It is pure insanity, man. Pure insanity. I'm always, I don't know why I called you dude. There's might be some dudettes. I know I got a couple female fans out there. It blows me away how good people's artistic skills are. I'll see somebody on Twitter who maybe isn't doing well financially. They're an artist, right? They're not doing well financially. And, you know, they say they're not getting any work. And I'll go look at their art and I'll be like, what the shit? Like, what kind of world do we live in where some of these people whose artistry is next fucking level aren't the absolute millionaires of the world? I'm not saying that they all should be, but you get my drift. In fact, I had Vlad paint, you know, he's done multiple things digitally paint, but he did a lot of work for me where he made the comic book cover for the International Podcast and a bunch of stuff for me, did some stuff for Takedown and I Aimless Banter podcast. And he just does amazing work. And, you know, he's not always busy. I can tell, because sometimes I'll reach out to him and he'll be like, yeah, I've got a bunch of time. I'll just be like, really? How do you guys have a bunch of time? I spend way too much money on personalized art, by the way. I don't know why, but something will catch my fancy. I'll be looking on, you know, I'll look at Andy's stuff. I'll look at Vlad's stuff. I'll look at Fiverr and I'll see some art and I'll be like, dude, I want you to draw this. And it's so amazing that somebody can do that to me, because I think there's very few things. And sometimes you'll get art that, you know, it's through the artist, right? So it's not always reflective of what you asked for. I've had that on Fiverr for sure. Vlad, I've never had it, because I've always worked with him and he knows that what we talk about, he usually drafts up and then we agree. We're like, this is where we want to go. And he just goes. And some people do it different. With Fiverr, it's more of an industrialized kind of 1, 2, 3 steps. So sometimes you'll get something back from Fiverr and you'll be like, that's not what I was requesting. But I've done some work recently. I had some avatars done for the channel and the rebranding I was going to do. Not rebranding, but I was going to, you know, put some avatars in the art. And I still got them, and I may at times. But with this, you know, we don't want to aim your YouTube videos at kids kind of thing. I decided not to post them because they were more kid-like, you know, a little bit more comic book-like. But I was just amazed. You know, I'm amazed at people's ability. I've got, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to say their name. They'll say it if they want, but I've got one. She's a writer and I talked to her on Twitter, mostly on DMs. You know, sometimes I'll post, but usually it's on DMs and we just talk back and forth. And I can tell when she talks that she's probably one of the more skilled at discerning things and understanding things when it comes to games, when it comes to just life and everything. And I'm just blown away that they don't have, you know, their own website and aren't a millionaire. It's amazing when you see this kind of talent, especially on Twitter of all places. Twitter's so caustic most of the time. And I get that. It is caustic. It's people respond, myself included. It's just, right? You're just back and forth. But then somebody will post something. You'll just be like, the fuck, man? Seriously? You know, you did that in what amount of time? And how are you not a millionaire? It's just, it's crazy. Hats off to everybody. And Andy, I don't know if you'll listen to this, Andy, because I blathered for an hour and 10 minutes before I saw your damn post. So you don't have to listen to all this. But if you do, that is a fantastic, fantastic picture. Yeah, just color work always impresses me. You know, black and white is great. I've seen a lot of people do black and white. And in fact, one or two of the shirt designs I have are black and white. And I think that there's a poignancy to those. And there's definitely an impact that can hit you with good black and white. But I'm usually a color freak. And for example, Thundercats is more of a 1980s, more of a, there was a cartoon called Fire and Ice that was like a Conan the Barbarian kind of thing that was back in the day and had a very stylized sort of something about it. It's the way everything was colored and shadowed. It reminds me a lot of Don Bluth, who did Titan AE, Dragon's Lair, the games with Dirk the Knight. He did Space Ace. Yeah, he's Rats of Nim. Secret of Nim? Rats of Nim. You know which one. The other. The cartoon. Anyway, that'll be it for me. We covered a lot, right? Yeah, we've covered everything I've got on this list, man. Look at that shit. Everything I've got on the list. That's crazy. It is like an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes in. I want to say thanks to everybody who got this far. I absolutely appreciate it. It's been awesome. Appreciate all the well-wishers. Appreciate all the people who aren't well-wishers, who don't DM me to tell me that I suck. No, I'm just joking. Most don't. I appreciate you if you go to check out those shirts. Even if you just check them out and tell me if you like the design or not. teespring.com/stores/ACG. Even if you don't get one, I would like to know what you think of the designs. If you like that idea, if you have a game that's coming in the future, for example, I think we can all assume Cyberpunk will be one I'll probably jump onto, but where it might make sense to do a design like this in the future. Be very cool. And also, again, thank you everybody who listens to these and posts these, tweets these, Facebook, what have you. The audio podcast stuff does really, really well, and it's really helped the channel. Well, it hasn't helped the channel on the YouTube side, obviously, but it's helped us. It's allowed for a little bit more coverage to where sometimes I won't be able to review a game and I'll be like, hey, man, I'm going to cover this on the podcast. Is that cool? A person will be like, yeah, man, you know, it's a smaller group. It's five. We get about anywhere from, we get almost 10,000 per podcast, maybe somewhere around 7,000 to 10,000 who listen per podcast, which to me, especially because it's not a major thing, is awesome. And it can help, especially, you know, some of these smaller games we talk about and banter around about. So by all means, as I continue to do things, I would love for you guys to give more topics, more questions whenever you see me post them. That'll be it for me. I hope you guys have an amazing time. If you get a chance, check out the Patreon. I would love for you to join. If you can't, I get it. Stay safe. Peace out. Enjoy the rest of your week.